I said to yesterday that we would go back and deal with the limud of Reish Lakish, that Zeh Kevesh Lifnei HaDibur. Right? This is a burial plot, or this is a a grave that was from before the Dibur. So just quickly, we'll just gazer over that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish had a machlokas. This is what we discussed yesterday. They have a machlokas as to what's the status of an Eiver that does not have basar kara'ui, does not have a proper amount of basar on it. Now, the Gemara already clarified that if it has an etzem kisse ora, then there's nothing to talk about, because we already know etzem kisse ora is mitame pe magam b'maso, and that would, we know that already, and then there's nothing to talk about. So if you have an etzem kisse ora, it's mitame pe magam b'maso. If you have an eber min achayr or a mace that has enough basar kira'ui, I mean, that's the halaut aruka, that it would be able to survive or regenerate itself on the, be grafted onto the body and work, then that already is metame ba'ohel negia maso. So now the question was, and this is what Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were arguing about, is what is the status of this eber min achayr, this eber min amace, if it does not have the basar kira'ui and does not have an etzem kisse ora? Reish Lakish believed that is metame b'mago maso, and Rabbi Yochanan says that it's not metame whatsoever. So then the proof, or the major proof that Reish Lakish brought was that he brought two different limudim. He brought a limud or two psukim that had limudim. One limud was for ohel, and the second limud was for nigia, for touching or coming into contact with tuma. And the pasuk that he brought, the ring that came into contact with tuma, talked about two different cases. One case of etzem kisse ora, and then a eber min hametz, eber min achay that does not have enough basar lalot aruka. And this is a drasha of negia, of touching. So the Reish Lakish said it's clear that if the Gemara wanted to say, if the Bryce was talking about etzem kisse ora, that this had etzem kisse ora already, we know that. Etzim kisse ora is already mentioned explicitly in the limud. So it must be that here it's telling you that when you don't have an etzim kisse ora and you have an eber min achay or an eber min ames that is, does not have basar kira'ui, it's metame b'mago u b'masa. And Rabbi Yochanan said, you know what, no, the reason that it mentions etzim kisse ora twice is because it wants to teach you negia and wants to teach you masui, that if it's Maga and Bimasa. I mean, the Rishonim point out that it's strange, because if they really want to do that, they should have just mentioned Etzim Kisora twice. Why do they hide Etzim Kisora in this Eber Min Hametz case? But either way, Rabbi Yochanan believes that it's used twice, one to teach you Etzim Kisora Bimaga, one to teach you Etzim Kisora Bimasa. Reish Lakish says, no, that the reason that the mission mentions is one case is Etzim Kisora Maga, and the other case is the Eber Min Hametz and Eber Min Achai that are not had though not have enough basar kira'ui, they are metame b'maga u b'masa. What Reish Lakish does about masa, right, was a question. The Rosh leaves it as a tzarach iyun, but I would generally say, we mentioned this yesterday, that you would split it between, you would just say those are two categories. There's maga maso, and then there is mace in the area of tumas mace. All right, now what we did do, the last limud in the pasuk that the quoted by the Gemara over there was Obe Kever. Reish Lakish said Kever Shlifnei HaDibur. This is talking about a Kever Lifnei HaDibur. What is a Kever Lifnei HaDibur? Alright, I will read quickly, I'll just read you what we'll read the Mefarish, and then we'll explain a little bit of the Tosos and explain that there are three or four Gemaras throughout Shas that bring a big picture together and that the Rishonim are trying to deal with. So first of all here, the simple way to read it is, what does it mean a Kever Lifnei HaDibur before Matan Torah? Dibur would be Matan Torah. Right, so that's what the Mefarish says. Komar, shuha ovde kochavim mitamim b'maga. Right, ovde kochavim, non-Jews, are mitame with contact, right, but not bitumat ohel. Apo bishurim mitamim bitumat ohel. And that's the exclusion. There's a limud in the Gemara in Yuvamot that tumat ohel only applies to Jews and not to non-Jews. When it comes to non-Jews, right, they are not mitame b'ohel, but they are Betame b'maga ube masa. So therefore, what does it mean? So the chavim betame. So lifnei hadibur. And so the first explains. V'choshaya kodim hadibur kodim matan Torah. What does that mean? Kodim hadibur means before matan Torah. Ben shel obdik chavim ben shel Yisrael kares never ben Noach. So it doesn't matter if before matan Torah. It doesn't matter if you were a Jew or a non-Jew. Right? You are all in the same category of a kever ben Noach. That kever ben Noach would only be metame b'maga umasa. And the same would be true after Matan Torah, for a non-Jew. I mean, the Jew status changed after Matan Torah. So that's the easiest. The Mefarish gives the easiest explanation and the simplest explanation. What is Kever? Here we're talking about a Pasuk that's talking about too much Mago. What's too much Mago? Too much Mago is you come into contact with your Maso, you carry a non-Jew, or even a Jew prior to Matan Torah. In that case, you're only, right, you're not Matami Bohel. And after Matan Torah, that applies to non-Jews, continues to apply to non-Jews. And that's what he's explaining here. We have a pasuk that teaches about Mago and teaches us that that's applicable to non-Jewish graves. That's the limud here. So that'd be very simple. The problem arises from Gemaras that are found in other places. One place is this Gemara in Yevamot. Yeah, if you come in contact with the mace, it's not really the kever, it's the mace itself that's the time of Mago Masa, right? Or, you know, that if it has a din of kever, then like we saw yesterday, then maybe if you come into contact with the kever itself, maybe that'll be enough to make you tum in the mace. Alright, the two Gemaras that are, or three Gemaras that are important, there's one in Yevamos, Samach Aleph, Amid Aleph. Gemara in Yevamos, Samach Aleph, Amid Aleph has the limud that a tumas ohel only applies to a Jew. It says, Adam ki amut be'ohel, that when a person dies in ohel, atem kruim adam, right, below of the kochavim. You are called Adam and not the of the kochavim. That term defined, the term Adam is only defined or used by Jews, not by non-Jews, and therefore the application of tumas ohel will only be by Jews and not by non-Jews. That is the position of Rabbi Shimon. Right, the kochavim disagree with Rabbi Shimon, but that is the position of Rabbi Shimon. That's one Gemara. The second Gemara is a Gemara in Moed Katan. Right? The Gemara in Moed Katan, Davdalit says that, I think I quoted yesterday, I was thinking it was Tanis, but it was a Gemara in Moed Katan, Davdalit says that you are Mitzayein Kvarot, that they put whitewash over the Kvarot to warn. That's only by Kvarot that are Mitamei Be'ohel. Right? Because then otherwise the necessity to whitewash or to demarcate the Kvarot is only true of when you're going to have too much oil. If there's no too much oil, then there's no necessity to demarcate these Kvarot. So therefore, you only are demarcate them. The last Gemara is a Gemara in the Bava Basra, in Cheskas Abatim. Right, that is, in the beginning of Cheskas Abatim, there was a Rabbi Bano. Rabbi Bano went around and was Mitzayin Kvarot, and one of the Kvarot that he was Mitzayin was that of Maras HaMachpelah. Alright, so he was Mitzayin, the Kvaros of Maras HaMachpelah. Now, if you put all of these Gemaras together, right, you get a picture of something that doesn't work so well here with our Gemara, which is, why is Rabbi Bano, right, and the last Gemara is obviously our Gemara here in Nozia that says Kevelis Nea Dibur is only Mitame B'Mago. So now, according to this, why was Rabbi Bano going around and marking Maras HaMachpelah? Who's buried in Maras HaMachpelah? That's Avram, Adam Arishon, Yitzchak. They're all Lifnei HaDibur. And we just said the Limud that what? Anybody who's Lifnei HaDibur, right, is not Metamei Be'ohel. If you're not Metamei Be'ohel, we saw the Gemara in Moed Katan says, Notzion Kvarot. So why was Rabbi Bano being Metzayin Kvarot, or Metzayin, most importantly, that of Maras HaMachpelah? Right, so that the Rishonim have to solve or have to reconcile between these Gemarot. So one answer, which is the answer brought by Tosis and other places in Jas, is that it's according to the Rabbanan. It's not according to Rabbi Shimon. This is the position of Rabbi Shimon is that Tumas only applies to Jews, not the non-Jews. Whereas the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Shimon and believe that Tumas all applies even to non-Jews. And therefore Rabbi Bano, who went ahead and was Machbia, who went ahead and demarcated and whitewashed Maras HaMachpelah, was doing that alpi the day of the Rabbanan and not the day of Rabbi Shimon. You do that? You have a question? I'm sorry? Oh, there would be nowhere to daven. Right. Very good. Right. So that is a good point why they would mark it, because they would want to know to where to daven. But over there, he was doing it in a manner that was to demarcate the tumah, which is they used to whitewash it, make it white, all white, which is to show, not just to put up a stone that says that this is the Maras HaMachpelah, but make it all white to show you that you can't come near there because it's tameh. But that is a good idea. That is true. We need it to be marked so we know where to go daven. It's a good point. All right. So now, the one answer of the Rishonim is that, you know what, Rabbi Bano doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. And that solves your problem. Then you have too much ohel, then you have a reason to be demarcated. You still have our problem here, which is, what's this lishna dibor, but you're going to have to say, like the Mefarsh says here, that it equates between whatever is after, I mean, the Obdei Kochavim after Har Sinai are equal to those lishna dibor. So therefore, this must also be the position of Rabbi Shimon over here. So that's one way to solve it.
We pass them like Rabbi?
No, we pass them like Rabbi Shimon. We pass them that Tumas Olam does not apply to non-Jews.
So then, why don't Kohanim go into Maras Machpelah?
What?
Why don't Kohanim go into Maras Machpelah?
Why don't? Oh, so that's so there we go. Good question. So now, that's only one solution of the Rishonim. There are two other solutions of the Rishonim.
Yes, according to those Rishonim, Kohanim would be left with.
Exactly. All right, according to those that answer, this is a Das Chachamim. We don't hold a Chachamim. You no problem. You could go in there. So the other possibility is that there are two answers here. One answer has to do with our Gemara here. What does it mean, Kol Dei Matan Torah? Right, we said that everything with Nag Dibor is now only Tamei Tumas Mato. Is that really true? I mean, that depends what you think Lifnei Adibor means. Lifnei Adibor, we just said, means Lifnei Matan Torah. So Tosfos over here gives an alternative based on the Riva. The Riva says that Kodem Hadibor is not talking about people before before Matan Torah, anybody before Matan Torah, but it's talking about Jews who passed away after we left Mitzrayim, before we got the Parshas Chukas, before we got the Din of Parshas Chukas. So these are people who are already, quote-unquote, right, they're leaving Mitzrayim, they're already a part of Klal Yisrael, but yet they die prior to Chukas. So I would have thought that they are, that they should also be Mitamei, right, Bitumas Ameis, because, like, in Ohel, because they're Jews, that's what it means, Kodem Adibor, right, Yibar Perish, Perish, Lifnei Adibor, Gam Otan Shemetu, Kodem Matan Torah. Referring to those that died before Matan Torah, remember, Parsha to Masameis. That's it. So they refers to, not to Obdei Kochavim. It's not dealing with that. It's dealing with the Jews in a particular period between, right, the time that they left Mitzrayim and the time of the Parsha's Chukas was given of Adam Ki Yamut Ohel, when they introduced this concept of Tumas Ohel. The Kodem Adibor is not necessarily referencing anybody born before Matan Torah, but rather just a unique group of people that existed between, you know, seems like between Yetzias Mitzrayim or between, let's call it, Marah, where they got some of the mitzvos, and the Parsha of Chukas, where they got, where they got Paraduma, and Parsha of Chukas, where they got other
people. Is he Madaik in the grammar of Adam Ki Yavuz?
That what? It's a future then. Right. So, possibility, right, that it's a, that's possible.
Earlier times?
Right, so that doesn't address, right, which, so you might have a right problem still about what happened with Avram Avinu and other Marishim. So that's the question. Does this Lifnei Adibor then leave all those people out, and this is a unique period, or Lifnei Adibor is referring to these people, but the same would be true of everybody beforehand, that it's not addressed.
Right? I don't understand
what the chiluk is.
Well, the chiluk is that they're in this they have a specific puzzle to exclude them. Which is that they're in this twilight zone between being a full-fledged person in Klai Yisrael, which would be Adam Ki Yamut Bohel, versus being, you know, whether they're Jews. Right, so you think Kabul Chomer. Right, I agree with you. So that doesn't necessarily solve the problem. The third answer, and this is the one that does solve it, is Rabbeinu Tam. It's Rabbeinu Tam brought down in Yevamos. He's brought down in Yevamos and Shas. And Rabbeinu Tam says, actually, you know what, I'll take it back. The Riva continues. I'm sorry. The Riva's answer. Should have thought of this. But it says, no, that Adam Arishon and Abram were called Adam. Because they were, he says, listen, Omer Riva, the Shapir Karya Adam, Adam Arishon. Adam is called Adam Arishon. So he is called Adam. Right, Abram ha Adam ha Gadol ba Anokim. Right, he's one of the great men, right, the greatest men. And we actually dash in from Tehillim. If he's a... If we use the puzzle when it talks about the Anakim, you know, Az and stuff like that, we dash in that for the Avot. So we see that there's a reference of Adam to Avram Avinu and to Adam Arishon. So he says, even though...
Isn't there a medrash that it's most difficult of Adam Arishon?
It's possible, yeah, possible. I don't know if that's the case, but yeah, very possible. But that's, you know, that's the case. So the Riva solves that problem, sorry. The Riva says, Lifnei Adibor refers to Jews just between, you know, Tzias Mitzrayim, between Mora and then Parshas Chukas. Then, how do we solve the problem of Maras HaMachpelah, what we're not doing? Those are unique people. What are unique people? Unique people are Avraham Avinu and other Rishon, which are called Adam. And therefore, that's why he was marking Marka Machpelah. And according to Rabbi Shimon, who holds that it's not, right, Rabbi Shimon, who holds that there's no Tumas Ohel by non-Jews, but that won't have application over here because they are exceptions, right, exceptions to the case. The last answer is this Rabbeinu Tam.
The suggestion being that even Rabbi Shimon would agree that Shimon and Avraham
are included under Adam Kiyam and the Ohel. Right, so then the last answer is the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that Adam is not always referring to non-Jews. Now that Adam, and there's a difference between what's called Adam and Ha-Adam. Right, that when you talk about Adam and Ha-Adam, when it says Adam, that comes to exclude non-Jews. Ha-Adam does not come to exclude non-Jews. And therefore, there's a difference. He shows throughout, you know, he brings other places in Shas where Adam includes non-Jews. And then the people challenge him, excuse the Rabbeinu Tam's position, bringing Sukkim that show that Adam. And then Rabbeinu Tam in the end says it's got to do with context. It has to do with the context. What would you have replaced the word Adam with? I mean, that is, Adam is a pronoun, it's like a pronoun that you're using to replace what would have otherwise been what? Right? So if Adam is replacing a pronoun that is, right, would refer only to Klal Yisrael, you would say, you know, then you say that Adam excludes Adam. Adam comes in a situation where it's replacing, you know, generic people, then that Adam would include Obdei Kekav and not exclude them. And you have to look at the context. So Rabbeinu Tam says that when you say Adam ki yamutzah be'ohel, even though we find other places where Adam includes Obdei Kekavim, over here it excludes Obdei Kekavim, right? But it may not exclude, again, may not exclude, I guess he's going to have to hold like the, exclude people like Adam Arishon and Avram Avinu, that they're not excluded for the word Adam, because we see they're included from other places in Shas where the term Adam is used. They include Avraham and Adam Arishon, and therefore you see that Adam has different context. I mean, it excludes different types of people, or different inclusions or exclusions. That Adam is not a generic term where you say Adam and it excludes everybody. Right? Adam has different meanings in different places, so you have to look at the meaning in this context. All right. So those are the three possibilities, but that's just an interesting sugya because that's to do with Maharat Machpelah and why Rabbi Bana was going in Mitzayin, right? Maharat Machpelah based on our Gemara. And there we had the different solutions or different possibilities of how we deal with it. Either it's like the din of the Chachamim against Rabbi Shimon. It's like the Rivo suggests that Adam Marishon and Abram are called Adam. Right? Or the last is there being a time was Michalik and when what the term Adam excludes. It doesn't always exclude the same thing in every place. It depends on the context and depends on the situation. What is excluding in this case, it would not necessarily have excluded Adam Arishon and Avram Avinu. All right, so that's Sugya. Now, moving on, we're at the two dots. So hopefully the Gemara will flow a little more. So the Parsha in Nazir says, right, after he brings his Karban Tumah, says, Gidash et Rosho b'yom lehu. He'll start his count on that day. He has to restart his count. After he has Tumah, he has to restart his Tahor count. So what is Kidash et Rosho b'yom lehu? What is the Yom Ha'u that we're talking about? Right, there are two possibilities of what's b'yom lehu. There were two things previously mentioned in the Sukkim. One is the Giluach, right, is the cutting of the hair. Oh, right, very good. The seventh day or the eighth day, we've seen this Machlokas earlier. Is it the B'yom HaShvi Yigal Chanu? That's the Yom it's referring to? Or is it U'B'yom HaShvi Ni Yavi Shvei Torim? Or is it on the B'yom HaShvi Ni Yavi? We have saw that Machlokas in Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi earlier in the Masechta. So is this B'yom HaHu the seventh day or the eighth day? Which is our Mishnah holding like? Who's our Mishnah holding like? Rabbi Lezer or Rabbi? When it says, what? It says, after, on the 6th, 7th, and 3rd, and 7th day, you bring a, and then, miyad, he begins his count. When it says, in our Mishnah, Adshi Taher, until he becomes Tahor, meaning it's on the 7th day, and Ad Avin Harav Shemesh, until the sun sets on the 7th day, that's when he can begin his new count. Rabbi Lezer, he. Or we're talking about the eighth day. My Shitaher, I should be carbon oath up. I mean, Itaher means until he finishes up his carbon oath and he's finished with the process of Tiglachas Atumos. Umani Rabbanan here, and that's on the position of the Rabbanan or the Rabbi. Tashma, Bibtani Seifa, the second half, our Mishnah, the Mishnah that we're referring to over here, says, Machilamun Emiyat. It says he begins counting right away. HaReshamai, Ashitaher, Ashiyavi, Karbinotav. So our Mishnah says Miyad. What's Miyad in our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that these are things that are not Mushkir, the, right, these are things that are, the upcoming Mishnah, we're about to do it in a second, but these are things that the Nazir is not Megaleach. They are Metameyu, but the Nazir is not Megaleach on them. So then it says, right away you start counting again. What is right away there? If you're Tameh, what do you have to do? You still have to get your Hazad Shlishi, get sprinkled by the Paradum on the third day and the seventh day, plus you have to go to the Mikvah on the seventh day and wait for the sun to set. So the Miyad, in the case of our Mishnah, upcoming Mishnah, must be referencing a case of sunset on the seventh day. So then why did the Mishnah, our previous Mishnah, not use the term Miyad? It used the term Achi Taher. Achi Taher must be something different than Miyad. And what's the difference between Miyad and Taher? That's the difference between the seventh day and the eighth day. So that's exactly the difference, and that's what the Gemara says. Tashuman, can I say, Pematkul Nuna Miyad, Harashim, my Achi Taher, Achi Bin Karbon Tav, Umani, Rabbanon, he must be referring to the eighth day, and that's like the Rabbanon, Amri Nazir Starach, Shmini Lo Kaila. You can't start counting your new Nazirut until the eighth day, until after you brought it, or until after you brought the Karbonot on the eighth day, then he can begin his count for his Nazir Batara. So the Medayik from the Mishnah, the difference between the upcoming Mishnah we're about to read and our previous Mishnah, one uses the term Yad and one uses the term Achi Taher, but there's a difference between them. And the difference between them is when you start counting. Is it when the sun sets on the seventh day, or is it when the Gluach on the seventh day, or after the Karbanot on the eighth day?
What's the difference if it's after sunset on the seventh day? It's the eighth day either way.
Right, I don't know if it literally is a good question. I just thought of it also. I was like, why at the sunset already you're into the eighth day? But I think what we would say is that once he goes to the mikvah on the seventh day and he's done giluach, that he gets the mikvah sayom kulo, and then he gets to start right away. Right, that is one nakamina. The other nakamina is for if something happens.
In other words, what ashiyatah?
Right.
Then it's an ashiyatah means
it's still
Yom.
But the other nafkamina, which we did have in the Gemara there, is what happens if it becomes Tameh on the night of the seventh. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, you've already finished your Tikkun HaTumah, and now you have to bring another korban if you become Tameh. Whereas according to the Chachamim, right, if you become Tameh, you're still within the context of your original Tikkun HaTumah. You don't have to bring another korban until after you've brought the korbanot on the eighth day. So that would be a nafkamina, even if they both start on the eighth, if you become Tameh on the night of the eighth day, before the eighth day begins. All right. Next Mishnah, Aval HaSachachot VeHapiraot. I won't define these because they will be defined in the Gemara. It's the first line in the Gemara. Right, so the Sachachot HaPiraot, UBeit HaPras, right, or Beit HaPras, that this is a field. Wait, Beit HaPras is a field that had a kever in it and then was plowed over. And the plow, therefore, moved what we assume, moved the mace all over, spread the mace all over a field. The Chavim goes there, that field is a area of, I think, 100 amos in each direction, 100 amos in each direction, that are mitamei because of this what's called Beit HaPras. Right now, I would mention to you that Beit HaPras is not going to be mitamei in the ohel. Beit HaPras is a din d'chachamim, and what are we afraid of? We're afraid you're going to walk in the field and touch a bone, stand on a bone, or touch a bone to musmaga. Because we're afraid that there's an etzem kitzora, now that it's spread out. You're going to walk on the ground, and by walking on the ground, you're going to move a bone. So, therefore, the chachamim actually have an exception. In Beit HaPras, if there's a pathway that's been walked on, heavily walked on, and the earth has already been depressed or pressed down hard, number one, we know that the bone then would be already pushed into the ground. Number two is that it's not loose dirt where you're going to move anything. There's not going to be too much hesed to moving of the etzem kitzora. So therefore, if it's heavily walked field, and it's a heavily walked path already, it might be that a kohen is already allowed to walk through such a field. It's only when it's, you know, not heavily used, there's not a defined path through it, that you would not be permitted to go through this area, because Beit HaPras would be possibly mitameh yubimaga uvamash because of the etzem kitzora there. Right, next is Eretz HaAmim. We've seen this earlier. There's a gzeiras of tumah on Eretz HaAmim. Now, I have to differentiate here between, we know that if you take a Neved Nezirut in Chutz La'aretz, that you have to go and restart it in Eretz Yisrael. The case here is no, you start in Eretz Yisrael, and then you go to Chutz La'aretz. So that is a different form of Tumah, because you did do your Iker Nezirut and started, and we're doing it in Eretz Yisrael. So for the Tumah in Chutz La'aretz, it will not be Soter, your Nezirut, it will only be suspended. Versus, right, if you started in Chutz La'aretz, where the Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue whether you have to restart it when you come back into Eretz Yisrael, because there you started the whole Nezirut. Right, then, Verova Atzamot. So this is what? Rova Kalatzamot. We saw this. Our Mishnah said, where is the Nazir Mikaleach on Hatsi Kalatzamot? Here the Mishnah says, not Rova Kalatzamot. And for Sha'ol's sake, Tosus asks over here. Alright, he says, the Girsa here is actually Revias Adam, the OL and Rova Atzamot. Right, these are all types of Tumah. that are not Megaleach on them. And then, even though, what? It would din over. Tosfos over here says it should have just said less than Chatzi Kav Atzmaut. Why did it mention Rova Kav Atzmaut? That's what you were asking yesterday. Why did it say Rova Kav and not just less than Chatzi Kav? And Tosfos answers that those are the Shiurim. Those are stages of Shiurim in Tumah. Therefore, the commission just picks the next lowest Shior, Bein Hochanan. So between a Rova Kav.
I'll save that answer for you.
So Rova Kav and Chatzi Kav would be even to me, but oh well. Alright? But Kelim had no Gim the Beit, and Kelim that touch a mate, we'll have to deal with that today, what that means. And, Ubimei Sifro, Ubimei Gimro, if he is a Mitzorah. Right? If he is a Mitzorah, then, when he is, number one, a mitzvah legamre, right? That's legamro. I mean, it's lechalutin, he's a mitzvah. Or, after he's been tired himself from a mitzvah, he has 7 days at the end. After he shaved his head, then he has to wait another 7 days in chutz la'olo and cut his hair again and go to the mikvah. Both of those periods of time, he is, what, in suspension from his nazirut, but he is not okay, his nazirut.
What kind of kalim?
Huh?
What kind of kalim?
Oh, that's an excellent question. There is
there's
a Tosfos the size of the entire next Amud that is going to deal with that. So we are going to discuss that in the Gemara today. All right? So I'm not. I didn't mention it on purpose because it's the issue of the Gemara. All right, we'll discuss it in a minute. All right, now, so all of these, Al-Elu, Inan Azir Megaleach, on these items, Azir is not Megaleach, Umadzeh B'Shlishi U'B'Shvi'i, and he gets... Paradumic is sprinkled on him on the third and seventh day. Does not undermine the first count. Again, he counts, this is what we saw in our price, right away, as soon as he's Tahor, he starts his count again. The Karban Eimlo, there's no Karban Tumah, obviously. But definitely, the Gemara says that there is one different type of Tumah that not only do not oker the nizirut, but they actually are counted towards the nizirut. Even when you are tameh, you still remain in your nizirut count. And what are those? Bemetamru is usually a halacha l'moshe Sinai, right, or some sort of misora that was by a zav and a zava, and you may heske rosho mitzora. So this is the third carry of mitzorah, the mitzorah before it becomes a decisive mitzorah. When he's in the beginning, when they're trying to decide if he's going to be a mitzorah, they lock him up for 7 days to see if it grows or expands. That's why he's called a hezger mitzorah. So, and azav and azavah, in all these instances, they are elu olim lo. Not only is he not oker his first days, he continues to count his zirut during these periods. All right, now, Mara wants to know, what are sakachot? And what is piraot? It's sakachot, a line of mesach ala aretz. It's a tree that has, expanse. It spreads out, its branches expanse out.
If
he comes out of his may heskero without becoming tamei, then he won't lose his
hair.
What? Yeah, but he's still considered may hesker. He has a dinim, but I'm sorry. If he later becomes tamei, then his may hesker counted, and then he gets suspended from the moment he becomes a mukhlat, mitzorah mukhlat. We do have a separate issue, which is your point, is that that's only a mitzorah that comes out as tahor. He begins his count again. He must have 30 days. That's a separate issue. That's a technical issue because he needs to grow his hair back, not because his tumah affected him.
Not because he needs it 20 years. He needs
right, to grow his hair back. All right, so now the Gemara says, Elohein ha-sakachot. What are sakachot? So sakachot is a tree that has branches out, an expanse of branches, that are mahahil. They have created ol over a beit hakvarot, over an area of parot, but all the branches are spread out. I mean that the branches are not necessarily close together. They are spread out, that they are more than a kotech tefach. They have more than a tefach between them. And Tosfos says that deoraisa, mi deoraisa, this is not tumah, because there is no real ol here. So if you pass under this tree, and this tree has branches that are leaning over a kever, and you pass under the tree, you're not really tamei mi deoraisa, because between each branch there's a tefach, which separates out, the branches makes them into separate ohalim. They're separate types of ol, therefore you would not be tamei. But midrabanan, they were gozer tumah in this case of holech tachtav. I would say it's a chokah to prevent or to stop people walking under trees in general that are over a kever, and you go under it because there'll be times when there's not a poteach step up between them, and that's going to cause a huge problem. So that's gezer sechamis. So that tumah. What do you mean, less than? Who says less than three tefachim here?
Did you say there's an opening of a tefach?
Tefach between each branch, meaning that ohel is defined by a tefach cubed. So a ohel, to create an ohel, you need a tefach. And if you have a gap of an ohel, of tefach, it's no longer an ohel. Meaning that those are two things. Both in ohel, it works both ways. Meaning, so if each branch, if one branch is hanging over a kever, and you have another branch over here, say there were just two branches to the tree, you know, your two arms to the branches, then this is an ohel, but over the mace, and it's a tefach, but this is not necessarily an ohel because it's not a continuum of that ohel.
Chachan Sukkis,
right?
We say that you need shlosh tefachim.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Is why?
Why you use the term of lavud? All right, so lavud is a. I don't think it's. No, not necessarily. Lavud is a halacha of Moshe Sinai that it works less than three tefachim, but over there, I think that's not. That's when we want to create a single entity. I mean, like, ohel is defined in this manner, and since ohel is defined in this manner, I don't think you apply lavud when there is a definition that's involved. I mean, that's a tefach kibd is a din in. I'm trying to think. There's a limud. It's a Mishnah, and all of us talk about it all the time. I'm not sure there is. I don't know if there is a. I don't know if there's a limud. I don't remember.
Maybe a sukkah that's not metami ba'ohel.
Right, that's right. You could have a sukkah that has a gap in it. That doesn't
kosher
have
sukkah.
Kosher sukkah that doesn't have a dinol. Because there you're trying to create a, you just need a continuum from the walls. That's what you're trying to create, not necessarily an ohel. Right, so there might be the definition of ohel in these two cases would be different. Very good. Alright, so you have a poteach tefach between them. So this is a din d'rabbanan. So this din d'rabbanan that makes you tamei, we say what? You know what? Even if a nazir is tamei, we're not going to be oker zirut because it's only a din d'rabbanan. The other one is ilan amesach and paraot. What are paraot? Paraot are avanim ayotzot min hageder. These are stones that protrude from the wall. Again, in case we have a beit paraot and you have three or four stones that protrude from the wall, under one of those stones is a mace. And this person walked under one of the stones, does not know which stone he walked under. So now, what do we have? We have a suffek tumas ohel. There's a din in general that suffek tumah b'rishus harabim is tahor. So this is a case where in a b'rishus harabim, right? And he walks under one of these rocks. It's a suffek tumah d'oraisa. It's a suffek tumah b'rishus harabim. He is tahor. The rabbanu nevertheless goes there tumah in this case. Again, I think to prevent people from going near beit hakfarot or going to situations where they're going to come into likely or probable contact with tumas ohel. So the chachamim nevertheless goes there tumah. Since there goes there tumah, again, it's a tumah d'rabbanan. It's not going to affect the nazir. It's not going to make him aleich aleihem. It'll make him tamei d'rabbanan, but not impact the nazirut. The Rosh over here points out that if first of all he walked under all three of them, say there were three stones and he walked all under three of them, then he's tamei vada, because then he for sure worked under it and he would be okay as nazirut. And number two is if it was in Rosh Hashanah. It was in Rosh Hashanah and this happened, it would be suffek tumah Rosh Hashanah, that's tamei d'oraisa, and therefore you'd also be oker his nazirut. So the unique case is it's tamei tumah Rosh Hashanah, which is tahor. In this case, the chum member goes there tumah. Even though there goes there tumah, it does not infect the nazir to be oker his nazirut. Okay, that is the sachot and piraot. Now, Eretz Ha'amim. Eretz Ha'amim is something that we actually bumped into earlier, right? We actually bumped into this prior. That what is tumas ha'amim ibaylehu eretz ha'amim mishum avira gozrube, right? We had this in Tavchav Mechokles Beisol Meishamei, when Beisol Meishamei argued about when you come back in from eretz ha'amim into Eretz Yisrael to recount it, what was the tumah that you had from tumas ha'amim? Right, the 30 days, you have to repeat the whole thing. So that's very good. So now ibaylehu eretz ha'amim mishum avira gozrube. What is the tumah in chutzlaris? Is tumah chutzlaris even for avir, or demo mishum gusha, or is it only the actual contact with the ground that is gezuelis? The mefarish, again, we had this similar issue between the mefarish and Tosfos there. The mefarish says, what's the difference between avir and gush? Just what you would think. Right, gush is if you touch the ground, right, that if you touch the ground, if you came into contact with the ground, then you are tamei, right, tumas eretz amim. And what is tumas avir? Right, that is gzeira chachamim. Right, that even if you come into the contact with the airspace of eretz ha'amim, right, that you will be tameh. but not a tumah, or if by definition, if it's avir that's mitameh, the Mefarish says that is a lighter form of tumah for sure, because it's an extreme gzeira. Well, we had it on Dachof, that it's such an extreme form of gzeira, so there's no reason to be mach, there's not going to be mach near me. The type of tumah that's going to come to you is going to be a lighter form of tumah. That's the way the Mefarish explains it. Tosfos, on the other hand, I think Big Master Ben Otam explained that no, that they're both types of tumas ohel here. Right, that if it's gush, if the ground is tamei, the way your parsha explains is you have to come into contact with the ground. That's what's tamei. Here you have to come into contact with it. Whereas the Rabbeinu Tam or the Tosus over here explains that it's too much ohel. That gush means that this is working like regular mace, and you'll have too much ohel. If you're ma'ahil on this gland, even though you don't touch it, you'll be tamei. What's the chumrah of avira? Avira is, even if you are inside of a shade that's made by migdal, even if you're enclosed in a box and you go in there, you'll still be tameh. Why? Because it's not working with the regular dinim of too much ohel. It's airspace that is tameh. If you work with it, if it's gusha, then it works like a regular mace, then it's tameh, too much maga, and too much ohel, like all the regular dinim of too much maga, and too much masa, and too much ohel. Whereas if you say that the avir is tameh, then we say what? It's even better than too much ohel. You're going to be tameh even if you're inside of an ohel, and that normally would protect you.
Or even like if you stick your little finger over the border.
Oh, excellent. So that's another, right, very good, excellent. That's the nafkamina brought down. I forgot who brought down, but somebody brings exactly that nafkamina. By tumas ohel, right, you would be, meaning that you have to have any part of your body that goes in would be tameh. So if it's too much gush, then any part of your body goes over, you're tameh. If you say it's too much avira, then it needs rosho verubo. You need to get your whole body across the border in order to be tameh.
In that case, by entering the house.
Right, how do you enter it? Right.
Well, I would enter first.
What I would say is that too much gusha, and I understand gusha is too much ohel, you stick your little finger over the border, then you wouldn't be tameh, because you need a certain size to be mahil.
I'm sorry, no, by too much ohel, too much ohel, as soon as you stick your hand in the house, you're done.
So your nose goes in and you're done.
So that's it. So that would be the equivalent of, if you're lurking with regular too much ohel, you're talking about gush. So that would be getting across. Whereas when two potato and shame and migdol, you say not be right, if you have to roast your barubos across the border. Okay. Either way, the tumas avir is a more meiko form, or I don't know, according to the Mefarsh, it's a more meiko form of tumah, or according to the Tosfos, it's a more unusual, it's exceptional type of tumah, because it even penetrates through what would normally not allow by tumas ohel. So either way, should be a quote-unquote lighter form of tumah, because there's such exceptional cases of tumah, they should be a lighter form. Yet in our mission it says what?
If it's an exceptional case, why would there be a lighter form of tumah?
Because it's...
The fact that you can derive, that you can contract the tumah more easily would suggest to me that it's...
So we had that in the Gemara of Chatz, the Gemara actually went both ways. The Gemara says, we saw that the Rishon, we explained it, that the Chumrah would be, which side is the Tzad Chumrah? Right here, the Gemara is clearly leaning that the Tzad Chumrah is Mishum Avira, and that if it is a Chumrah, it would have a lighter form of Tumah. Both Tosfos and the Mefarish here explain it. On Daf Chaf, we had two Lashonos in the Gemara, I think, if I remember correctly. We had Mishum Avira, guys, were late. We had two Lashonos about which way was the Kuli Alma, and which way the Kuli Alma went, which way he thought would be more of a Chumrah, exactly what you're suggesting. That if it's more exceptional, it should have more Chumrah Tumah associated with it. But that here, the Gemara clearly leans the other way. You're going to see from the question of the Gemara in a second why all the Lashonos lean this way. That is now, if you look here, the Gemara's question, Tashma, Mazeh Mishlishi Mishvi, right, that he gets a, this, remember, this is all Tumah Derabanan, this is not a Tumah Dereza, it's all Tumah Derabanan, and he gets sprinkled on the third of the same day. Biyamar Mishum Avira, Hazal Lamali. Why would you sprinkle on him on the third and same day if the Tumah was Tumah Zavira? So I mean, that's the underlying assumption, that Tumah Zavira, even though it happens in more instances, meaning that it's a much broader net, if everybody always don't believe, it'll be a lighter form of tumah because it's so expansive. I mean, that you won't have both. If you have a less expansive view of what tumah seres ha'amim means, then you're going to have a more chumrah understanding of tumah. If you have a more expansive view of what makes you tameh, then you're going to have a less expansive view of what the chumrah of that tumah is.
Yeah, actually, I think the wording and articulated it more in that way. Right? Is it, did they make it not much like tumah meis, or was it just a gzera on...
Right, exactly. Exactly. That was the Gemara, but it has to do with the Gersa in the Gemara of what you say Kulei Alma is, and that would define it. There were two Gersos in the Gemara, but yes, that's exactly what the Gemara said there. All right. What do you need? Gusha must be Magusha. So Mar says, no, that when it talks about Mazah Mishlishi Ushvi, it's talking about the other items in the Mishnah. It's not talking about Eretz Amin, it's talking about the other items in the Mishnah. So Hapa Nami Mishtabra. This makes sense. Why? Because in the Mishnah it mentions the Kelim and Nogim Bemeit. Kelim that you touch and eat. So what is, this was what Steve was asking, what type of Kelim are we talking about here? Hadi Kelim, B'nei HaZoinun? These Kelim require a Tumas Shlishi and Shvi. So what's the case here? You have a kli that touched a mace. A kli that touched a mace is, what's the status of that kli? That kli is an av ha-tumah. An av ha-tumah. Oh, except the exceptional case would be metal, right? But so let's assume that these are regular kalim, not metal kalim. These kalim touch the mace, right? What do they become? They become an av ha-tumah. If a nazir comes into contact with them, he is a Rishon Latumah, which is Tumat Erev, one day. So why in the Mishnah are we saying that if he comes into Anogim, Kelim Anogim B'meit, all of a sudden that the Nazir is going to be, what? He's going to be Mazesh Lishit Shvi. He doesn't need to be. He's not Tamei 7 days, he's only Tamei for one day. So it must be that when we say Mazesh Lishit Shvi, he's only talking about some of the cases in the Mishnah, not all the cases. What are the exceptional cases? One exceptional case is Eretz Amin, maybe. Another exceptional case will be these Kelim Anogim B'meit. That's the end. To the end of the sugya. We're going to deal now with the kelim and nogi b'meit. Go ahead. You can.
Kelim and nogi b'meit sounds like a continuous participle. Like we had previously,
it's too much sibur in here. Right. That's the Gemara's not assuming that here. That's not the case yet. Yeah, that's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that there's more than one. That's the answer to the Gemara. By because I'm in that Shara. Gemara said, I show you because I see other things in the Mishnah that are listed here that don't need too much Shlishi and Shvi. That's exactly the answer to the Gemara. It's on both of them. They said it twice. All right. So now, this big Tosos, the big Tosos at the bottom here, deals with this question of Kalim. All right. So now, which are these Kalims here? So why don't we say that, obviously, the Gemara believes here that we're not talking about metal Kalim. Because how do you know we're not talking about metal kelim? Because the Gemara assumes that you wouldn't be mazeh b'shlishi u'shvi, right? So if they would mention metal kelim, then we wouldn't have a problem. So it's clear that this Mishnah is not talking about metal kelim. But what would be the status of metal kelim? The status of metal kelim would be that if a metal kli touched the mace, it would be like an avi avot ha-tumah. And if a person came to contact with that, he would be an av ha-tumah. So that would be the implication from our Gemara, is that if the mace comes into contact with a non-metal clay, that Nazir is only Nana Tame Tumas Rishon, and therefore he doesn't, what Okir is, he's not Okir is Nizirut, and he doesn't, he only needs Tumas Erev, he only needs to be Mater himself for one time. Whereas, if it was a Tumas Kli, meaning that it was, a metal Kli, then that metal Kli would adopt the Tumah of the mace and would become a Via Bota Tumah, and the Nazir who came to contact that would be an Alpha Tumah. That would be Oker his Nizirut. That would be Oker his Nizirut, because that would be regular Tumah's mace. So now, that is challenged. That's the position of Meal Tom. That is challenged. Listen to this question. We can read it inside. I'll show you where it is in the Tosus here. There's in the Tosus 2. For 5 lines down, and the widest lines in the Tosus, the last word on the line. 5 lines down on the last line of the line, it's v'sholach. It's an amazing question. V'sholach lo Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen. You see that? V'sholach lo Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen to Rabbeinu Tam. Based on what you're learning over here, is it bayit asher tibnuli? I love how they quote. What house are you going to build for me? So obviously, Rabbeinu Chaim is a Kohen. He wants to know what house he can live in. Why? Ein nazir megaleach alav, right? That we won't have a nazir megaleach alav. We have a principle that anything that a nazir is megaleach alav, a kohen muzahar alav. Anything that will cause a nazir to oker, right? Or that will cause a problem, that will cause a nazir to have to shave his head and do tiglakas atumah, that a kohen is not allowed to come into contact with. Now, let's talk about a what? Let's talk about a house here. Houses have in them. What do they have in them? They have kli matechot. They have metal kelim, and they also have nails, metal nails in them. That's what he says here. Ein nazir alav hu adin kohen muzahar alav. Ve'ein lecha bayit she'en ba shum kli matechot she'yu ba'ol ha'meis, o shum masmer. That there's no house where you can have metal kelim that were never in an ol ha'meis, or metal kelim, or nails that were tamei tumas meis. If that's the case, They are what equivalent to Ariyam Kalal. And if a Nazir came into contact with them, what would be his status? He would have to do Tiglachas HaTuma. If he has to do Tiglachas HaTuma, me as a Kohen, I can't come into contact with these items. What type of house can I live in? I can't come into contact with these Kelim, and I can't, what? I can't touch these nails. And even worse, if the Kelim, the metal Kelim, are what at the level of a Via Bota Tuma, maybe they possibly have a din of Ohel on them, right? And then you can't go into this house. So that's, where can I live? There's no house like, based on what you're saying here, that if it was a metal Kli that touched the mace, and then the Nazir came into contact with that, he would have to be Megaleach. If that's the case, then a Kohen would be Muzar Alav. If that's the case, I can't find a place to live. That's a Rabbeinu question.
Assuming that every piece of Montechet has come in contact with
the mace. That's their underlying assumption, that's true. Because anything, I mean, we assume that, especially in their day, less so in our day, where
the mace was too much Ohal.
Right, too much Ohal mace, not in with the mace itself. But it has,
people presumably die in homes.
But that was in their day, I think it was very, very common that no people here die in the hospitals today or in other places. And there, people passed away in their houses. Literally, that was the way they passed away. So they said, metal kilims, it'd be so unique or unusual case where you wouldn't have too much of mace. Anytime someone passed away in the house, the coin could never go back into the house anymore. Right? I mean, that he'd be precluded from going to that house. So he said, that just seems ridiculous. That's Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Chaim HaKohen goes back and says, no, that's not true. That when the Tosefta and Olos and Mishnah and Olos says that if someone comes into contact or a Tumas Ola will apply to a metal Kli that comes into contact with the mace, that's only for Truma and Kodshim. But a Nazir would not be Megaleach Alav. What does that help him? That helps him because where's the equivalence drawn? The equivalence is drawn between anything that is Megaleach Alav, a Kohen is Muzar Alav. So what he solves, by Reb Chaim HaKohen saying that the case of Ohel, or the case of Harehu Kalal, impacting the Nazir to be Megaleach, to be impacting him to be a Tumas Shiva, is only application by Truma and Kodshim. But it's not Oker for a Nazir. If he says it's not Oker for a Nazir, then a Kohen is not Muzar Alav, and that will allow a Kohen then to go into a house.
Does he need Hazah, according to
him? Yeah, you'll need Hazah, Shlishin Shvi, but not... It would not be if you came into contact with it. I mean, that there's no... But he's not Muzhar Alav. I mean, that's a coin. He's not warned from coming into contact with that type of Tumah. But he would... The Nazir would need a Tumah...
It wouldn't be so...
So that's the problem. Now, if that's the case, according to Rabbi Chaim HaKohen, what should our Gemara say? What's the case in our Mishnah? It was metal Kalim that came into contact with the mace, and then the Nazir touched it. What's the din? Mazesh Shlishi Yitzvi, but not Tiglachas HaTumah. They could explain, our Mishnah could have been explained by Kli Matechet. Why didn't the Gemara say that that's the answer? Our Gemara assumes that it's not Kli Matechet because they can't solve the problem. How do you get Mazesh Shlishin Shvi by a contact with the Kli? Now, the Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen created a wonderful case. It says it's a metal Kli that came in contact with the mace. Right now, he touches that metal Kli. What's the status of that Nazir? Is he Megaleach on that? The Chaim HaKohen says, no. Is he coming to a Shiva? Yes. So that would be the explanation in our case. That would be the explanation. And it wouldn't be Ashara. It wouldn't be excluded from the case here. So Rabbi Chaim HaKohen explains it and says, well, interesting thing. He says, Hakimahu Diktani Ashara. Coming out of Misora, they had a Misora that it was talking about the other stuff. And based on that Misora, they said that it wasn't talking about a metal Kli here, but rather talking about a non-metal Kli. But in Hakanami, you could have had a case of metal Kli, but that was the Kimlihu Dirabonon that it was not a metal Kli here. The last thing I'll point out is, I mentioned this yesterday, that there was this Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont. This Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont has an unusual shita that... Harehu Keklal does not just apply to metal kelim, but applies even to non-metal kelim. The Harehu Keklal applies to any kli. Any kli that comes into a mace will adopt the status of a mace, not just metallic kelim. It's unusual shita, right? Everybody else disagrees with him. And he has some proofs. He has some interesting proofs from the Mishnah, the Kosefta of all of us. But one of the issues for the hymn, or for Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont, is our Gemara right here. Our Gemara over here is clearly differentiating between metallic and non-metallic kelim, and according to him, there is no difference, so it makes it very hard to explain our Gemara. So this is one of the proofs against his position. All right, we'll stop here.